Welcome back to the Missing Maura Murray podcast. I'm Tim, here today with Lance in the Crawl Space Wormtown Studios. How are you, Lance?
I'm doing very well. How are you today?
I'm doing great as well. For this episode, episode 78 of the Missing Maura Murray podcast, we are going to read your emails because we get a lot of emails. And so we want to thank everybody who sends in your emails, your thoughts, your theories, your questions. It's a little overwhelming to get back to everyone. Obviously, we can't get back to everyone. So that's why we want to do an episode like this every once in a while, kind of add this to the rotation.
Right. And please don't be offended if we don't get back right away. We are reading all of the emails, and we do take every one of them, you know, with a huge amount of consideration. And whenever we get a chance in between breaking news on this podcast, we like to sit down and go through them and flag them and then plan an episode where we sit and talk them through.
So before we get into the emails, just want to mention a couple of quick news items. One of them is a screening that we're having in June, June 24th. It's a Sunday at doors at 6 p.m., a screening that you and I, Lance, are doing of Finding Maura Murray, our Quebec search section.
Yep, this is at the Rockwell, where we've been before. Davis Square, Somerville, Massachusetts. You said doors are at 6. The screening will start at 6:30. We'll do a little intro, and then everybody can watch this, the trip to Canada with James Renner. This is sort of an extended cut of what we showed at CrimeCon as
right.
well.
Right, exactly. So the one at CrimeCon was like 60 minutes on the nose. This one's going to be around 75. We haven't finalized everything yet, but we know what differences there will be. So there, like we said, that CrimeCon cut will never be seen again. This one may be seen again. I'm not really sure, but it is different from the CrimeCon cut because we have so much footage. We can do whatever we want with it. So it's going to be about a 75-minute cut, and then we're going to do a Q&A afterwards.
Do a Q&A for however long the theater allows us to stay in there. The great people over at PI Magazine, Jim and Nicole, who we met at CrimeCon, have decided to sponsor this live show, this screening of Finding Maura Murray, and that's PI Magazine. It's a professional investigator magazine. They will be there. They will have copies of their magazine, and if you have any questions for them, how to maybe get a subscription, there'll be more information very soon about that.
Yes, very cool. So PI Magazine, so check that out. And also, we want to mention that a portion of the tickets for this documentary screening will go to the GoFundMe that is out there, that Maggie Freeling started, that is for ground-penetrating radar service for searches, and the remainder being a reward for information.
And tickets will be $15, and $5 of that will be going towards the fund. And you might be asking, where do I get tickets for this event? Well, currently we are figuring out how to sell them directly off of our website, so you can go to crawlspacepodcast.com. There'll be a link there that will hopefully be an obvious link that'll say live show or Finding Maura Murray show, and you'll be able to buy the tickets directly from our website. We'll have the links and everything in the our Twitter and socials and whatnot.
Okay, and a couple of quick notes from the past couple episodes, one being the CrimeCon episode where we talked about the 911 transcripts from Faith Westman's call and Butch Atwood's call, which are now out there in the ether. So we just want to thank Aaron Larkin for putting in the work and getting those out there because it's really important. And probably more than anything, because there's really not much information in the calls, but more than anything, it's important to see that there's not something incredibly mysterious in those calls.
Right. And that's really what all of the new information that comes along should end up being viewed as. It's not so much looking at what could be there as a clue, but what's not there to dismiss. And we've said that before in the past, that, you know, we're not particularly looking for the smoking gun. We're looking to eliminate something and hope that whatever's left is the answer or leads us to the answer. And we do get a lot of information, and we do have a lot of people out there that research and provide us information. And occasionally we do make the mistake of not crediting the person. And we wanted to do that with this episode and say Aaron did put a lot of work into getting this. And if there's any time that we don't give credit, it's not because we're trying to take credit. It's just the information information is pretty enormous, and we want to get it out there, first of all.
Yeah, and we're in a bubble here. We record this in a bubble, so sometimes, like I think I forgot to, you know, we forgot to thank Maggie on Crawlspace for, like, hanging out with us all weekend at CrimeCon, because it's like, oh, she's our buddy. She was just there the whole time.
Right.
So, you know, that's just one example of how that can happen in podcast form.
We literally are in a bubble.
Yeah.
We are physically sitting in a bubble right now.
Right. I mean, you know, no outsider hears this before it goes public. So sometimes there are, you know, errors like that. Another error that we made was on our local dirtbags episode. Want to be really clear about this, because this is a correction that we really need to make. So this brush fire that we were talking about that happened on February 10th, 2004, which of course is the day after Maura Murray went missing, we stated that there was a brush fire that was called in that was on a certain member or a certain person's property that is like a couple of hundred yards from the crash site, from Maura's accident site. So we actually got the address wrong on that.
Yeah, well, it's not like we got it wrong. It's just we said it was an address, but when you look at it, the actual police call log, there's a redaction for whatever reason. It's probably nothing nefarious, but it has who called it in. And that's unclear whether or not that person was the person burning brush, or he was calling it in to say someone was burning brush, just a heads up. His address there registers to his family, but there's a little collection of homes right behind that it could have been on a number of those homes. So it could have been between X number and X number on that road, right in that little area.
Okay.
So a specific property should not be assigned to that.
Okay, good, great for clarifying that.
Hopefully that clarified and didn't further confuse everything.
Right, but so the point is that there was a brush fire still right in that same vicinity we were speaking about on the day after Maura went missing. It just might not have been Gary Bootlier's property, but it was in that vicinity.
In that, from what we understand, in that close vicinity.
Right, and not even necessarily called, or not done by the person who called in necessarily. We actually don't know.
Is yeah, correct.
Okay.
Just in the way that it's worded in the police log, it doesn't specifically say this man called to say he was burning brush.
Okay.
It says this man's name, brush burning.
Okay, so we put out as much info as we kind of can on that,
right.
Sounds like.
Yep.
So now with that business aside, let's get into some emails here. We got one from CJ. He says, "Hey, Tim and Lance, love the podcast. Been researching the case since the Oxygen doc and have been listening ever since. Obsessed with it. It's addicting because, as you guys mentioned, there's just so much mystery. This hits a little closer to home for me, though. My girlfriend graduated high school with Maura's cousin. Not sure the formalities on it. Just know they are cousins. And there is one thing bugging CJ that can't seem to break, though, and it's this Loon Mountain 3 who never showed up to work that night. What if, and it's a massive if, but bear with me, those three who never showed up to work had something to do with it? Not really a massive if. I mean,
that's been out there.
Yeah, that's the implication in the show, yeah. I would say. But again, with this Loon 3, you know, this is a good example of getting emails about this a lot, because we've talked about it before, but we don't know who they are. Like, if you know who they are listening right now, please let us know. Please email us or email the cold case unit in New Hampshire as well. We don't know even that there is a Loon Mountain 3.
If they are, right.
Right.
This could just be one of those things that was started long, long ago, and maybe somebody wanted to get somebody else in trouble and thought that it was fun, so they put the rumor out there, and it just picked up steam, picked up momentum. And, I mean, it's got such a catchy name to it, too. It's got such a mystery name, the Loon Mountain 3. Say that anywhere in the country, and it just strikes a chord of, you know, darkness to it. So it does have a catchy name, and don't feel bad about it being a massive if. This is another one of those things that should be either, you know, accounted for or dismissed.
Mm-hmm. And he also goes on to say that he thinks Butch Atwood is the sketchiest person in the case to him. And, you know, mentions how he left shortly after, moved to Florida. His story changed slightly over the course of some of those articles. And I think that, you know, CJ, we don't think Butch is sketchy at all. And I think the main reason is these 911 transcripts.
Right. If he did something, you just sort of have to look at the time frame. And it does strike everyone as sketchy right on the surface that Butch Atwood, exactly, the last person who talked to her, he changed his story. But we keep saying that eyewitness accounts are typically and historically not reliable. And, you know, he's not thinking that he's going to need to do this, talk to the police and try to give a description. And when he sees a picture of her, it doesn't look like her right away. I mean, this is just human errors.
Yeah.
And it's a human thing for him to call 911. And you see the transcripts is a very boring phone call.
Mm-hmm.
He's almost making small talk with the person. And if he did anything, if he had the opportunity to do something to Maura, it would have been either at the car or if she decided to walk up in that direction. And then he took the opportunity then.
Right. Could have been after the call.
Right.
Which kind of doesn't, you know, wouldn't make sense really, because the cops are on their way, if not there already.
Yeah, and one thing that we've just started to consider is what if Maura was just hiding out behind the weathered barn and just was chilling there for an hour?
Yeah.
And that's something that just, you know, is sort of mind-blowing in a way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was searched by Cecil, I believe, right away. He went to the weathered barn.
Searched the surrounding areas.
Yeah,
of the weathered
that
barn.
Area.
Yeah.
But that's not to say that she couldn't have hustled up Old Peter's Road just a little bit and basically done the exact same thing we're talking about now.
Right.
And hid for an hour or so.
But keep looking into stuff like that because, you know, that's sort of investigation 101, I guess, if someone's missing. Who was the last person to see her?
Yeah, so thank you very much for the email, CJ.
And I just want to follow up real quick on the end of this email where you said people are talking about this case more than ever. And I love hearing that from a random person, CJ, who's listening, who's telling us people are talking more than ever about it. That's the point.
That is the point. Perfect. Okay, so another one from Lee.
I think this one's going to be an easy one.
Tim and Lance, I started listening to your podcast, started at number one about 2 weeks ago. I pretty much listen most of the day while at work and during my commute. It's very interesting to hear how you've learned your craft as you've gone along, getting more and more savvy each episode. There is one thing, however, that really bothers me to the point that I might not be able to keep listening. Your continual use of the F word throughout your dialogue is annoying, to say the least, but more and more you have taken to using the Lord's name in a derogatory way. I was appalled when listening to your shows from CrimeCon that you would just assume your live audience would be comfortable with abusing God's holy name with impunity. I know there are instances where it is required when quoting. Okay, well, you get the point.
Right. Everyone gets the point. The subject is it really necessary, all in caps. She does go on to
She
further compliment and say that she thank you for your desire to find the truth regarding Maura and Brianna, and I'd love to know what is happening to the men in Boston who are ending up in the water. Please keep digging and reporting. And I'll just say I'm sorry. I know I use the F word, and I know I say, you know, the Lord's name in vain when I'm just exasperated or frustrated. And if you're not quoting something, then it is just out of frustration for whatever situation we're talking about or exasperation. And I just don't know how else to express myself. So I'll try to do better.
Yeah.
And I'm trying really hard to not make a joke right now. Like, I'll try to do effing better. But you get it. And
yes. And I apologize as well, because I'm sure there's been more than one F-bomb that I said in the course of this podcast as well. And I think when we record them, we will usually cut, you know, a lot of times we'll actually end up cutting those out unless it's for emphasis for whatever reason.
Right.
But I think these CrimeCon ones, it was basically a live show with zero editing. Actually, I don't think we did any edits on those episodes. So that's probably why you heard them in those ones more than normal. So sorry about that, Lee. We will try to be better. Lance, I want to tell you and our listeners about something that I tried recently that's just, it's outstanding.
What is it?
Daily Harvest. Have you heard of this?
Oh, yes, yes. You turned me on to Daily Harvest.
We've all seen a mouth-watering healthy smoothie on Instagram or Pinterest and thought, you know, that's the kind of thing I should be eating. But who has the time for that?
Right. Or how about those delicious acai bowls?
Mm. I always thought it was acai.
Nope, it's acai.
Daily Harvest sends superfood eats straight to your door with your choice of smoothies, activated breakfast bowls, or nice cream vegan sundaes.
I like that. Nice cream.
Yeah, it's a play on ice cream.
Yeah. Each single serving cup comes in ready to blend or heat. So you really just pop open the top, pour your liquid of choice in, and heat or blend.
Their produce is organic and unrefined and looks as amazing as it tastes.
Just like you.
Oh, thanks. You can actually see all of the whole ingredients when you open the cup.
Daily Harvest freezes all of their ingredients at peak freshness, sealing in their nutritional value.
Preparing each cup is insanely easy. Just add water, or if you're feeling fancy, you can substitute other liquids like coconut or almond milk. I used almond milk.
The almond milk's really good.
Yeah, that's what I do.
Yep.
Either way, your Daily Harvest cup is ready in just 30 seconds, so you can eat it right now.
You can eat it right now. I'm going to go do that.
Go to daily-harvest.com and enter promo code MMM to get 3 items free off your first box.
That's promo code MMM for 3 free Daily Harvest cups at daily-harvest.com. That's daily-harvest.com. We have Lauren here, who sent a very nice email, praise from Mississippi. Tim and Lance, I had the pleasure of meeting you guys at CrimeCon in Nashville. It was a pleasure meeting you as well, and in parentheses, and now I'm following everyone on Twitter as well, so obviously people made an impression on her. Our encounter was brief. You two were kind enough to pose for pictures with me and my mom before heading off to a meet and greet. As kind as you were, it was not our meeting that resonated with me in the past weeks. It was the portion of your documentary you shared on that Friday night. And she goes on to say she's an editor in the TV industry. She's been doing that for over 13 years. She loves the music, uses the same gentleman that we use in some of her videos. And
Kevin MacLeod. Shout out to Kevin MacLeod. He's a fantastic composer.
Kevin MacLeod. She loved the story, the passage of time shots, the length of each dissolve, the typeface when captioning quiet audio. She says she sees everything just from an editor's point of view. And that's awesome, Lauren, that you saw all of the work that does go into a cut like that. And what you have to, you should see all the footage that wasn't used. And, you know, when you make that decision,
right. I love that she says, you know, she wrote us 2 or 3 weeks after CrimeCon because she said that it resonated with her and she's been thinking about it. And specifically some of the like editing and some of the details of the music. It's an incredible compliment to the screening and to what we have in this documentary. The passage of time shots, the length of each dissolve, the typeface when captioning quiet audio. So she's very aware of these things, and it's a good sign, I think, for the documentary. You know, it's going to stick with people, which, again, is the point.
Right. It's not like we don't think that there are any mistakes in it or that it's perfect, but it's nice to get something where what you've done right is acknowledged. And the reaction that we had from people at CrimeCon ran the gamut of people thought it was tragic and brought tears to their eyes. People, you know, found moments that were very surprisingly comedic to us.
Yes, yes. And infuriating as well.
And infuriating, correct. Yeah. And so that's what it does. It, you know, I don't think that people are going to watch it and immediately have a feeling, but I think people will watch it and keep thinking about it. And it resonates with you because it's very surreal and almost absurd.
It's a deeper dive like than this podcast. Like it's a video look of at this podcast in one way, right? It'll document exactly this whole journey that we've been on with the podcast and what you're going to see at the Rockwell on June 24th and what you saw at CrimeCon was before the podcast ever even started. So that was our introduction to this journey, and that was with James Renner, and we went to Quebec, following leads that he had generated and hanging missing flyers. That's an important part of this whole journey for us. And again, we're not even at the part where the podcast starts yet, but
with the documentary.
Right,
in the documentary.
Right, yeah. But people have told us, you know, those same things about the podcast. Like, it infuriated me. It brought tears to my eyes. It maybe a couple of points would make you laugh, I suppose, but not the point, obviously. But it's a video version of this. So if you have emotions when you listen to this, this obviously isn't a perfect podcast. We try our best, but it's not perfect. The documentary is going to follow the same chronology as the podcast does. It even starts before the podcast does.
And it's a really amazing, and I didn't even get this until reading her say that it resonated. It's a real amazing look at Maura as a person as well, and keeping Maura as a person resonating in your head and not losing sight of her as a person. And, you know, look at what one young woman did unintentionally, and look at what's happened because of what happened to her. And you can easily lose track of all of the things that aren't her, like Crime Con. But this, what we try to do is, with the podcast and with the documentary, what we try to do is to somehow bring it back to her.
And it always comes back to her because of the footage. I mean, most of the footage we're up there, or a lot of the footage we're up at near the crash site, we're always talking about her in, you know, going into this mystery, trying to decipher some of these clues or whatever we're learning at the time. So it really is all about her, but it is more about the societal effects of her disappearance, her very mysterious disappearance.
Right.
And what that does to people who look into it, you know, quite frankly, they become obsessed. And so what we're doing is shedding a little bit of light on that. But ultimately, the documentary will raise a lot of awareness. Will hit. It's a different medium than podcasting. So some people who will never listen to a podcast will see this documentary and say and learn about the case.
And maybe it'll inspire them to do the same thing with a case that isn't Maura, that no one knows about because it has reached the point of like 10 years or 11 years, and it's not looking like it's going to have any traction to get answers. So maybe there's other ones out there, and they can see what, you know, can be done if you give up everything in your life and work on it.
Right. And we will be putting these episodes, this documentary, up on the internet for rental, for video on demand, and a portion of that is going to go into either the GoFundMe that's currently going on for reward and for searches, or a different account that is for the same purpose just after the GoFundMe page ends, because in reality it's probably going to be over by the time the documentary hits VOD.
Yep. Just know, anytime you purchase something that is directly related to this podcast or the documentary, whether it's a live show or a video on the on-demand download, just know that no matter what you purchase, there's always going to be a percentage going towards some fund that helps with anything having to do with finding answers, whether it's a ground-penetrating radar, a reward.
Billboards,
anything.
We don't know. I mean, right. And the Murray family is okay with this. We asked them. They are okay with it. So that is where we're at with that. And, we will let you know more information about when these episodes will be available for download. Right now, all we have edited is this Quebec search part with James Renner. We're going to go further, than that as soon as we can. But right now that's all that we have in viewable format.
Maybe we should take a screenshot and send it out of what you showed me this morning of all the files and all the organization. It looks like something that's out of the CIA. It's like the files within files that are carefully labeled, and I mean an insane amount of footage. So if if people are like, oh, why haven't you edited the rest?
It's like 8 terabytes.
Yeah, we know what's there.
If you don't know what a terabyte is, that's 1,000 gigabytes. So 800,000 gigabytes of raw footage. So it's a lot, basically. And if that doesn't mean anything to you, which I'm sure there are people that it doesn't, it's
picture 800,000 U-Haul trucks full.
I mean, it's just a lot. So thank you for that, Lauren, and thank you listeners for appeasing us while we talk about that a little bit. Are you tired of overpaying for your uncomfortable contact lenses, Lance?
That is just a direct question to me.
Yeah, because I don't use contact lenses because I have perfect vision, perfect if you remember. Vision, yep.
And you have perfect revision, too.
Oh, good point. Yeah, and posture, some say.
Some say, and your hair.
Do you overwear your contact lenses, though, to save money? Because I know a lot of people do that.
Yeah, exactly. You have your dailies, and you want to stretch those out to weeklies. You can probably do that.
Well, what if I told you you can get a fresh pair of lenses for every single day for less? 60 contacts for $33. You do the math. It's barely a dollar a day.
If you were to tell me that, I'd tell you to get out of here right now for filling my head full of lies.
Well, this is a way more affordable way to do it than other brands. Just go to HubbleContacts.com and get your first 2 weeks free.
Now, contacts are expensive because four companies control 97% of the market, and Hubble just comes in, and that's why you're able to get daily lenses for a better price.
Oh, that sounds like a monopoly, Lance. But no more overpaying or overwearing. I'm putting my foot down for you.
Thank you. Thank you. And they're legit. They're featured in Vogue, GQ, you get GQ, TechCrunch, that I get that, and Mashable.
Go to HubbleContacts.com and get your first 2 weeks of lenses for free. That's 15 pairs of lenses for free.
That's unbelievable. Go to HubbleContacts.com and see the difference. Get that? See the difference.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Yep.
Make sure to select our show, Missing Mora, at checkout.
That's Hubble, H-U-B-B-L-E, contacts.com.
HubbleContacts.com. So we got an email from Maggie, not Maggie Freeling, who says, first off, great work. Just started listening about a year and a half ago. I've been obsessed with finding out what happened to Mora. Decided to re-listen to your podcast to see if I could get some clarification on some things. Of course, that left me with more questions. And so we're here to try to answer those. Maggie? Yep.
Maggie, great job with your very detailed and clear email. I mean, we have bullet points, we have numbers, we have highlights.
Bold.
Underlined.
Yeah, italics. Very well done, Maggie.
Very well done.
With the email. So she says, just finished listening to Behind the Scenes research episode from January of 2016. She said, I suddenly became overwhelmed with the feeling that the answer is so obvious that she didn't run away. She didn't go off to kill herself. She wasn't planning to meet anyone. No one was driving in tandem. I feel like the answer has been right in front of our faces. Humans are pretty predictable if you can just look beyond the surface a bit. And she says that she does work at a mental health facility, so analyzing behaviors and actions are so fascinating to her. So so that's an interesting point of view to write this email. But she thinks that that Mora took off on an adventure alone. Her friends from home talked about how she did this before. And she took off for the day, didn't tell anyone where she was going. And I believe that's from the Disappeared episode. One of her high school friends says she went to Boston at least one time by herself.
Right. And Maggie here has a bold and underlined sentence that says, that tells me she wasn't afraid of going off on her own. So why wouldn't she do it again? Goes back to her, this could be the simplest answer. Why wouldn't she do what she's done before and felt comfortable doing in the past?
I don't know. She is talking about the alcohol that was purchased, which we got the receipt from, thanks to Maggie Freeling and Art Roderick and the Cold Case Unit. They provided that just recently. It is redacted, so we don't know what liquors were purchased there. But Maggie here in this email goes on to say, if she did in fact buy Kahlua vodka and a box of wine with that $38, that tells me that sometimes, she likes white Russians and sometimes likes red wine. And that seems like a lot, but it doesn't necessarily mean she planned to drink all of it. If you want to drink a mixed drink at home, you have to buy the ingredients, right? That tells me she planned to go away for a few days and figured she may be in the mood to switch it up.
That's interesting. She gives a bit of her past here as well. In my college days, not so long ago, I won't say how many years she writes, but she writes, LOL, my sorority would have weekend formals twice a year. I remember one year, me and one of my friends split two bottles, might have been three, LOL, of tequila, multiple limes, a 30-pack of Bud Light, and a jug of orange juice. Then she continues to say how inebriated she became. And it's just an example of a college-age woman buying way too much, way more alcohol than she was actually going to drink. You don't want to end up running out of alcohol. That would be horrible. Now, would anybody, I wonder, ask Maggie if she currently views herself as having an alcohol problem? Like, people hear about what Maura had or possibly had in the car, and everyone goes to, well, she had a drinking problem. That's a big thing that's out there. So I wonder if that was ever a consideration when Maggie was her age in college.
But I think in a lot of cases, not every case, I'm sure, but you know, the average female college student, male or female college student, drinks very heavily. Especially if you live at college, that's just a fact. I mean, most students, I would say, do that. Not all, obviously. So you can't speak for everyone, but we know Maura enjoyed to enjoy drinking, as most college students do. So that puts her in the category as an average person.
Right. She says, if I ignore all the white rabbits surrounding the case and look at Maura as an average female college student, the reason she left UMass is simple, which is she was comfortable going and doing what she had done in the past.
Yeah. It's very possible. Okay, thank you, Maggie, for that. We've got one from Tyler.
Tyler
says, my name's Tyler, and I've been listening to your podcast along with my cousin Jeff since episode one. We've heard a lot of theories over the time on the podcast. The most popular one right now seems to involve police involvement or the A-frame house. There are other theories out there, of course, but from what we've noticed lately, those seem to be the most popular right now. I myself was convinced that the A-frame house was the big thing we needed to investigate, and we still should. But Jeff and I have another theory that has been brought up that has not been focused on as strongly as we think it should be. We have a feeling that Maura met someone online in a chat room and was with this person when she went missing, and here are the reasons why. Window of time that Maura had to go missing, that's one. Two, Lori Bruno saying that, Lori Bruno's a psychic, who said that the computer/hard drive had some important information on it that the police are missing, and she thinks Maura met someone online. Three, discrepancy in the time that it took to drive from UMass to where Maura was last seen. Internet in 2003, 2004, I'm not sure what his point is there, just that chat rooms were prevalent.
Yeah, I think like AMI was... Was it AMI?
AIM.
AIM was more prevalent, more used.
Shaky relationship with Bill, the fact that she told no one where she was going, spur of the moment trip, Maura's breakdown at work. He says he understands this is speculation.
Yeah, I suppose it does look like she could have met somebody in one of the chat rooms and then planned to go off to meet this person, but that means that there's somebody else out there that knows that Maura was going to meet them unless she was using a fake name, and that person never met the person who Maura said, or never met Maura. You know, if you're chatting with somebody online and you organize a meeting with this person and that person doesn't show up, wouldn't you try to reach out to that person?
Oh, I'm surprised you took it that way. I think I took it as the way, like, oh, this
person did something to her?
Yes.
Oh, well, then that would mean that somebody's out there who did something to her, and maybe they should look at the hard drive, and I don't know.
Right,
how.
But that then it puts the all the responsibility on looking at that hard drive and assuming, now you're assuming the police didn't look at that or didn't look at it hard enough and, you know, didn't find what would have been probably the most obvious thing to look at is your chats.
Right, unless the chats were deleted and you weren't able to pull them back up.
Yeah, I mean, anything's possible. Who
right.
knows, you know?
But that still gives you one person out there that knows something, and I guess you can go by the one of the rules of thumb that we've learned from speaking with investigators is, you know, does that matter? Does that matter? If they haven't found it out yet, does that matter when you're looking at what happened on Route 112?
Yeah, I don't know. And just to clarify Lori Bruno's comment, she did say that she thinks that she met someone online that the police missed and that's on the hard drive. But she also said that she believes that Maura was picked up by someone local. So she actually said during that live show that whoever she met online wasn't the person. So it's a little bit of both sides on that one. I don't know what to make. And obviously, you know, I love Lori, but she's a psychic. Who it's not really like you get actionable leads all the time from a psychic unless you're given a location.
Right. And it's okay to speculate like this. Send us all of your speculation.
Yes.
And keep going. But, you know, don't with the bullet points here of, you know, here are the reasons why it's 1 through 8. Try to make them not work as opposed to make them work.
Yeah.
And number 8 is Moore's breakdown at work. How does that really tie into her meeting somebody online, taking a spur of the moment trip? How does the breakdown at work tie into this theory? You know, try to make them not work.
Right. Yeah. And again, with the computer hard drive, that I suppose that is something actionable that the police could do, but it's not something that we have any control over whatsoever. All we can do is mention it here on the podcast and hope the cold case unit hears it or, you know, is asked to look back into it or something like that. That's really all we can hope for. Lance, did you know that it's easier to keep the hair you have than to replace the hair you've lost?
Well, that seems to make sense.
I guess so, right? But, you know, there's a solution. It's 4hims.com. It's a one-stop shop for hair loss, skincare, sexual wellness for men.
Is this backed by science? Because I only do things that are backed by science.
You bet your butt it is. Hims connects you with real doctors and medical-grade solutions to treat hair loss.
Now, these are well-known generic equivalents to name-brand prescriptions that help you keep your hair.
No snake oil pills or gas station counter supplements. Prescription solutions backed by science.
No waiting room, no awkward doctor visits. You save hours by going to 4hims.com. It's so easy.
So order now. Our listeners get a trial month of Hims for just $5 today, right now, while supplies last. See the website for full details. You know, this would cost hundreds if you went to a doctor or a pharmacy.
Perhaps thousands.
Or millions. I mean, that's a lot of money.
That is a lot of money. So go to 4hims.com/MMM. That's 4hims, FORHIMS.com/MMM.
4hims.com/MMM. Okay, another one from Nama.
This is one of my favorites.
Okay, it's subject headline is Synchronicities. She says, I'm a new diehard fan of your show. Thank you. It's only been a few weeks since I started listening, but I've caught up and started Crawl Space, which I love even more. And she's caught up on that one too. She's done very little else during her recent descent down the rabbit hole. Except cleaned her apartment and increased her run distance.
There you go. We're contributing to a clean, healthy lifestyle.
And then a couple days ago, I got to the Crawl Space two-parter live with Lori Bruno and started sobbing uncontrollably. I've been obsessed with Giordano Bruno for decades since I was a kid, and my mother was too. I'm an actress slash musician slash filmmaker. I wrote and shot my first film on an artist residency in Finland in 2015, and it came out last year. It's called Sorceress, and it's available on Amazon Prime. I'm really not trying to pitch my film. I just wanted to document how bewitched she was, quote, in quotes, recognizing the pun, by Laurie Bruno's ancestor, Giordano Bruno. She really comes across anyone who's ever heard of him. And of course, if you have not heard of Giordano Bruno, he was a forward-thinking person in the 1500s who was burnt at the stake for heresy in the year 1600. And so her film is all about Giordano, her mother, and Giordano, and a maddening obsession. So that's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I like how she says hearing Lori was cathartic. Because right. It was.
Right. Right.
And she, thank you, she says, your show is just perfect. It's been a pleasure to listen to you define your roles and your craft and grow into your shoes, to borrow the expression from one of your guests. She is she was locally born, but she's on the West Coast now and looks like she is trying to catch one of the live events that we have, and it would be great if she was in the area at the end of June. She could swing by the Rockwell. We'll set a ticket aside for you. How's that?
Yeah, that'd be great. Send us another email, and you have a ticket held aside for you for June 24th, Sunday night at 6 p.m. in Somerville, Massachusetts. Okay, and last email here. This one's from Jessica. She was wondering about the rag in the tailpipe. Do you think it's possible that the rag was meant to be an indication left by Maura that she intended to return to the car? She says, I live in North Carolina, and it's common to see broken down cars with a rag, grocery bag, T-shirt, etc., as a sign, yeah, I broke down, but I'm coming back to get my car. Interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. I thought when we first read this email that it was going to go in the direction of a sign or a signal to somebody saying, you know, I've made it and I've gotten away for whatever. I've successfully run away. I personally, I don't know about you, I've never heard of that leaving a rag or something there as a sign that I'll be back for my car. The thing about it was that she had a backpack. She had many things in her car that she could have written a note on saying car broke down. I'll be back. And I would hope to think that Maura would go to that more than a vague, you know, signal with a rag in the tailpipe that actually had to, like, you had to look for.
Right. Yeah. I've never heard of it either as a sign that, yeah, I broke down, but I'm coming back to my car. Not to say that it's not a thing that exists out there. I have no idea if Maura knew that. Fred has given her some kind of old school advice in the past, specifically about cars, actually including the rag. So if we want to get into it here, so Fred said that he gave Maura this rag and he told her to put it in her tailpipe to prevent her car from smoking when she's driving back and forth to nursing clinicals.
Right. So you're thinking on campus and
close distances.
Yeah. I think he even said, you know, if you're there and you see, you know, campus police or somebody, or, you know, to put the rag, it might get you by, but it probably won't. And I remember having, I think we've said this before, but I remember having a car, one of my first cars sputtered. It had like a cylinder problem and it sputtered when you went over a certain mile per hour. You had to like ease up on it. And if someone had told me back then, if it sputters, put a rag in the tailpipe, that would have translated in my head as it's going to give my car more consistent power. Just not knowing a lot about cars at that age. And it does not seem outside the realm of possibility that Maura's hung up in a snowbank and her car is sputtering as she's trying to get it out. And we know that she was putting it in reverse a few times because of the eyewitness saying that they saw the reverse lights come on. So she probably tried to get it out, going forward, reverse, and thought, if I put the rag in the tailpipe, perhaps my car won't sputter, and that'll be enough oomph to get me out of this.
Well, I don't think she was able to get it started based on the black box. I know that account from the Marats about lights, but maybe it was just a brake light, her tapping the brake light and trying to get the car started and not the reverse lights.
Right, sorry.
Or maybe the, you know, because sometimes you can put a car into gear when it's not on, so maybe that was what happened. I don't know.
Right. Could be. So either way, right. Okay, so we know from the black box that she tried to start the car seven times.
And was unsuccessful.
Right. So maybe, right. Okay, so then maybe that is why she goes to, that even makes more sense now. That's why she goes to put the rag in the tailpipe.
Right. And so in this emailer, Jessica goes on to say that she's wondered if the flurry at the back of the car, flurry of activity at the trunk of the car, was her putting the rag in the tailpipe. And that is what we think. And I don't exactly know why, but I would guess that it was based on what Fred told her, because it seems too coincidental if it's not, if she put it in there for this reason, yeah, I broke down, I'm coming back to my car. You know, it seems more likely that it was what Fred instructed her to do, since he's the one who gave her that exact rag and said to do that. So yeah, that's our take on the rag in the tailpipe. I know it's really mysterious. And also she locked her car, so, you know, and left alcohol in the car. So that's also probably a pretty good indication that she wasn't ditching the car forever.
That seems like a pretty common thing that people have done. You know, anytime we talk to somebody from law enforcement, they say, yeah, we get that all the time. Car abandoned on the side of the road and someone comes back. Just want to do one more from Samantha asking about satellite pictures to find Maura. She says, I've just been wondering if satellite images of the area where Maura disappeared have been requested. And sorry if you have already discussed it on air. I'm still listening to the older episodes. I enjoy your podcast a lot. Thanks. And oh, she's from Bulgaria, which is cool. So greetings from here. And yeah, I don't know, satellite images from that time frame. I don't believe anyone.
Well, who would you request them through? I'm confused. I mean, you can go into Google Earth and use the time machine feature and date it back to 2004.
Right. So I guess my reading of this was to pose the question of, I'm not sure where you'd get that from. So I guess my question is back to Samantha asking, is this something where she's talking about a Google Earth like backlog, or is it something from like the International Space Station taking images of the Earth and you have to request it from them?
The government or yeah. like a Freedom of Information Act yeah. for satellite images, you're saying?
Yeah. yeah
there's nothing like that to my knowledge, and the International Space Station wasn't up there in 2004.
Right, okay.
But there might have been other satellites that take pictures.
Interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know where you'd go with that. Please email us at missingmoramurray@gmail.com if you have any info on that, or if you have a question or just want to send us your theory or anything. If you've got any relevant information to the investigation, please send that to the New Hampshire State Police Cold Case Unit. Obviously, you can send it to us too, or Maggie or Art Roderick, and we will get it to the appropriate place. So thank you very much for listening, everybody. Any last words, Lance?
I'm just glad that I didn't use the F word.
Thank you very much. Follow us on Twitter at MoraMurrayDoc, and come check us out at the Rockwell on June 24th, Sunday night at 6 p.m.